Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Welcome to Mission Watch Live, another Messiah's Branch national satellite radio program. We are broadcasting from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's day is October 30th, 2014. With Mission Watch Live, we are warning the world as it happens. If you need help with anything after this program, call me. If you need a prayer, you can call me for that also. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, or message. Phone number, of course, 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. If you can't reach me, 316-619-4886, or send me an email with your phone number embedded in the email. Okay, you can always find up the updates with the breaking news, our ministry, radio program archives, and our mailing address on our blog, which is simply prophecyhour.com. There's also one over there to link to Mission Watch, the programs that we've did. So go over there and have a look. Also, remember, at prophecyhour.com, that's really smartphone friendly, as is our podcast. Boy, I went brain dead. As is the podcast. Over there also. In fact, at the podcast place, you can get a app for, you know, an Android app for on Google Play or, you know, so on and so forth. Enough about that. Quick prayer, and then we will bring on tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray. Father, I pray that radio goes according to your will and not my will. Because, Father, I don't know how to do radio. I really don't know how to do anything without you. So, Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, bless this program tonight. Amen and amen. Well, in the second half of this program, we'll have on with us Drew Johnson. He's a columnist, editorial writer, and government waste expert at the Washington Times. We'll talk to him about an article he just wrote on climate change. But I want to talk about some of the election stuff and to get some feedback on bringing Frank Stephan on, which does the Frank Report on here on ABR and is also this radio producer and, of course, has his own show and was on with us last week. Are you there with me, Frank?
Yep, I am, Dan, and I just got to say, you're never going to make it as an auctioneer.
You know, I don't have a forked tongue, brother, so, you know, not picking on anybody out there that is an auctioneer, but I don't talk as fast as some people.
That's anyway, what I meant. I didn't mean the line.
Yeah, I know. I get the drift. You're here to pick. I get it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. For the record, before we go any further, you know, we're going to have to schedule a part two to that program I did with you last week because you left it unfinished. So we will be scheduling one for that.
Hey, I can't help it. I'm old.
Yeah.
You know, it's a long story, man. It's a long story. What can I tell you?
Well, it's an interesting one, but today I want to talk about voting and a couple other things. I got a couple little articles, and we'll get your comments on it, and we'll see what we can dig out of this. Okay, voting in Maryland. You know, four citizens today have filed a lawsuit to stop illegal aliens from voting. It seems that they have undeniable proof that some 400 illegal aliens are on the voting rolls. How do they know that? They cite jury court records where people have excused themselves from jury pool saying that they couldn't be on a jury because they're illegally in the United States. We've also seen voting machines turn Republican votes into Democrat votes. These things, I really wonder, I think could change the tide of the election. What do you think?
Well, it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody because this whole black box voting thing has been known for over 10 years now, since they first came out with the Diebold machines. You know, it's been a question. And then there's been lots of evidence over lots of years that these machines are not necessarily unreliable as far as how they work if they're set up right. They're like your computer. You know, I mean, your computer's pretty reliable as long as it's got decent software. But if you put in, you get some sort of virus or something, now it's not so dependable anymore. And if somebody wants to hack into these machines and change the election votes, well, we've got a problem because they are very vulnerable. They're using off-the-shelf software that isn't even allowed, and they're doing it anyway, and nobody cares. It's like everything else. It's like illegal immigration. What, are you kidding me? Gee, I can't be on the jury pool because I'm an illegal alien, and you mean to tell me they didn't go to the house and arrest these people and deport them? Why not?
Because they want them there.
I'm sorry, I can't be on the jury pool because I'm robbing a bank later today. And, you know, I would be arrested for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Then this one really ought to interest you. I got another one for you. Let's get your... You know who James O'Keefe is, right?
I do. They call him... what is he? He's the video guy, the pirate. You know.
Okay. Well, he did a new one. James O'Keefe's Project Retrus released a video exposing campaign officials condoning voter fraud in North Carolina. The video features a woman presenting herself as an illegal immigrant from Brazil who said she has a driver's license and is registered to vote even though she's illegal. Several of the officials she encountered are working for law enforcement candidates. She asked for a verification of her ability to vote. They all tell her she can't. Even after some of them, they consulted supervisors. Last week, the Winston-Salem Journal reported that a list of 145 people have been granted President Obama's deferred action for childhood arrivals, in other words, the cheap amnesty. They note the actual number of illegal voters could be much, much higher. Breitbart News reported Wednesday that the figure of non-citizen on the voter rolls in North Carolina is high as 1,400. Well, you know, really, with the point margin, the way it is between these two, in this case, it really looks like illegal immigration could decide the race there. What do you think?
Well, and there is no way this should be happening because it's the rule throughout the United States and every state of the union that you must be a citizen. It doesn't matter if you're even here legally. Even if you have a green card and you're allowed to work and you're allowed to have a driver's license and you follow the rules, you went by the law, you did everything right, you know, that's great. You're still not allowed to vote. You must be a citizen, not a permanent resident, and certainly not an illegal. You know, it baffles me. And they act as though they can't, you can't figure out, you know, that these people are citizens or not?
Well, you have to look at it in a broader sense, don't you think? Number one, they're trying to get rid of the term illegal alien because it's offensive.
I fully agree, and I think they should be called criminal aliens.
Well, I thought we were going to have an argument, but I'll agree with that. Because why? Not only did they come across the border illegal, but clearly if they're voting, they're doing other illegal things.
Well, Dan, the whole argument about illegal is they say, well, you know, no man or woman, no human being should be deemed to be illegal. And they say that's just saying that their existence is illegal. Okay, fine. If that's the way you feel about it, then you can be a criminal alien because now it's not based on your existence. It's based on your activity. You are a criminal because you have broken the law and you are committing crimes by doing so. So you're a criminal, just like a bank robber is a criminal. You know, I mean, what, are all the bank robbers going to say, look, you know what, that's very offensive that you call us criminals because, you know, we feel bad. Well, sorry, you know, you're a criminal. If you commit crimes, you're a criminal. That's the way it is. So,
right,
criminal alien, that's, I agree.
Criminal aliens, well, see, I can't even find anything for you to disagree with today. How about this? You know that they just did a study, and let's see, where is this at? New Hampshire. that working age people 16 to 65 holding a job in New Hampshire has gone to immigrants, which most of that and population growth has went to them also. As much as 71% of the net increase of these people have went to illegals in the state of New Hampshire. What about that? And in New Hampshire is another, isn't it one of the higher critical voting places or something?
Yeah, they've got the Senate race between Brown, who was the senator in Massachusetts, who lost, and then he moved to New Hampshire, and now he's running there, and he's in a real tight race. Although, from what the polls are saying, if you can believe those, he's got now a 5 or 6 point lead, because the woman there is just an arrogant, rude. I mean, she even got booed by the crowd. They started chanting rude, 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 because she's just a typical Democrat that, you know, won't let the guy finish his statement. It's your turn to talk, and she just got to pop in with her mouth, right? And, you know, people are realizing, look, you know, he gave you your chance to talk. Now it's his chance to talk. Shut up, you know, and that doesn't go over well with people. So it looks like he's in the lead if the polls can be believed. But, you know, when you say, and now they... One thing in New Hampshire, because I did read that article, and they count illegals and legal immigrants together in that. So it's 71% of the job growth is aliens. Now, whether they're legal or illegal, they don't differentiate how much of that 71% are illegals. But, you know, even if it's a quarter, that's far too many, because what... Okay, so what's happening to the what's happening to the citizens of New Hampshire? Right. Are they being denied jobs because they're being taken by aliens? Or are there just so many jobs in New Hampshire that, you know, there's jobs for everybody who wants one? I don't know the answer to that.
Well, actually, we're seeing the same trend over all the United States, that most of the job growth since 2000, and I think it was 2000 or 2008 or 2009, they quoted, most of the new job growth in this country has went to illegal and legal aliens, which goes back to things. So what, we got a bunch of ditches that nobody will dig except for, you know, foreign workers or
something?
Because
the bottom line is this, you know, your citizen recognizes that, listen, you know what, I can't pay my mortgage, I can't pay all my taxes, I can't pay all the things that a citizen has to pay on minimum wage. But you see, if you're an illegal, or I mean a criminal alien, you see, you're not paying any of those things. So you can work for minimum wage. So they go to these places, and, you know, people are saying, look, I can't. And really, you know, they go, well, you know, Americans are lazy, they don't want these jobs, and blah, blah, blah. No, they don't want the pay, because there's no point in going to a job just so you can crawl up outside into your cardboard box, because that's all you can afford on the pay they're giving you. You know,
right.
There's no point in going to work if I can't pay my rent.
Right.
If I can't buy my food, if I can't have my life, and I'm not talking living it up on vacation and stuff. I'm talking pay my rent, pay my electric, you know, pay my food, pay for my gas, my insurance, and all the other stuff that, you know, if you're playing by the rules, you're supposed to pay.
Right. Right.
They don't play by the rules, so they don't pay all these things. Now, I'm not saying all those things should be tagged on to people. People should be left alone. Obviously, if you want rent, you want to live somewhere, you're going to have to pay rent. You want electricity, you're going to have to pay for it. But the taxes and all the other stuff, the fees that you got to pay for this, the insurance, you know, these guys buy a $200 car, they drive around with no insurance, no license, no nothing. They go back and forth to work. Maybe they get caught once or twice a year. So what? You go get another $200 car, you're back in business. And because they don't get put in jail, they don't lose anything because they give the cops a phony name. And, you know, that's how it goes.
Right, and because they're illegal, the police aren't holding them any longer because of the policies that are put in place by Obama.
That's right.
They release them from jail. And in fact, the one that killed those two deputies had been arrested several times. Did you hear about that? Yeah, they had been arrested several times for criminal, and they were let go. But now they shot two deputies, and well, I wonder if they're going to hold them now for murder, you know? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, you know, another way that these thing about these criminal, and I really like this idea, folks. From now on, we should call them criminal because that's what criminals do. They do criminal offenses. But let's go with this, Frank. There's several stores that I can go to on Friday nights in Wichita, and you don't want to go around, you know, from about 4:30 till about 7 o'clock because there are a lot of criminal. Aliens in there cashing their paychecks, and they'll cash their paycheck, but they'll not walk out with all of it in cash. They'll turn around and the largest percentage of it, which, you know, is a good thing, I guess, for their families, but not for the country. They take the money and they Western Union it back to whatever country they're from to support their families. Now, it's good for their families, but that money's not being spent in the United States.
Well, that's right. That's right, and you can see it at the post office, the international money orders. You know, come welfare day, man, these people are down there getting international money orders, sending them all back over to Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and I've watched that, you know, here.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right
there. And I don't really care what anybody does with their money, but the thing is, the fact of the matter is, okay, but yet you have an American citizen who wants to move to another country and work and make money there, and who's on his tail? The IRS is chasing him down across the world saying, listen, you, we don't care where you're making any money. You've got to give us our cut. Not only are you paying the taxes in the country you're living in, you're going to pay taxes to us, too, even though we're not doing a darn thing for you. You know, and okay, well, wait a minute now. So, you know, if you're going to do that, which I think is totally wrong.
I got one for you about the IRS. There was an article I read this last week, and it was talking about how these mom-and-pop businesses that couldn't that do cash business, you know, because they can't afford to run credit card machines and things, and they have to still have a bank account to keep the cash in. So the bankers, bank people have advised them, well, just keep your deposits under $10,000, and that way a red flag doesn't go off at the IRS. Well, but the IRS takes the rolls of banks and scans through it for people that are making large cash deposits that are under $10,000 because they deem it as an illegal operation. So they have, and we're talking about people that are just mom and pop restaurants and things like that, little tiny businesses that do cash business, and the IRS is going out and confiscating all their money without no proof. You
and
know,
no criminal charges and no nothing.
And
I read
no,
that story about that one restaurant. Although I've got to caution people, and I've done this long before this story ever came out, and told people, look, if you're going to do, you know, stuff like this, and even if you're not, she had $33,000 in her checking account, which is just insanity. Okay, you do not want more in your checking account than you need for your monthly operations, okay? You know, whatever it is, and I realize, you know, you got to have some money for cash flow to do your business, and you know, because people want checks, they want, you know, the debit,
right,
automatic debit, and all this stuff, and you got to do business with your vendors, and that's fine. But you should not have more than 10% over what you need every month to operate, you know, because that if they do seize it, then that's all you'll lose.
Right.
Take the rest out. Get cash, go buy gold and silver, you know, dig a hole in your yard, put it in a jar or whatever. You know, it's there. You can always cash it back in. You know, you're not going to lose the value, the buying value. You know, the price of, you know, what it costs to get goes up or down or whatever. But your buying value is going to stay the same. You see, it doesn't matter. Oh boy, gold went down. You know, gold went up. It doesn't matter. Your buying power remains pretty much the same. And that's what you're concerned with, is what can I get for this? Not, oh, how many Federal Reserve worthless pieces of Monopoly money does it cost me to get this? You know, it's how much, what can I get for this? You know, once I, you know, when I cash it in, what can I buy for this? That's what matters. You know, and the only way you can keep anything safe anymore is if you got your hands on it. Because if you don't got your hands on it and you're letting somebody else take care of it, you're at risk. Now, you don't take your storage food or your guns and ammo and store it 1,000 miles away at somebody's house or something that could keep it safe, do you? You know, why would you want to do that with your money?
You could always go put it at the bank.
Yeah, sure, in the safe deposit box, right. Yeah, and that's another crazy thing people do. They go out and buy gold and put it in the bank safe deposit box, which, the IRS has already said, hey, we can get in there anytime we want for any reason we want.
Right. Right.
It's more safe than your bank account is.
Yeah, that word safe on it, in that aspect ought to be changed to something else, you know.
Yeah.
The meaning of it, at least, because it's definitely not safe, nor is it private, folks. But, you know, so much of the public, you know, well, I believe your listeners and my listeners are, you know, are pretty educated folks. I'm paying you a compliment because if you're listening to us on talk radio, you're probably listening to some other things and you're probably into the news. But for the most part, Frank, America is pretty dumbed down.
Oh, it's a nation of idiots. I mean, you know, I mean, honestly, the things people do and they believe are unbelievable when you actually get to speak to people. I mean, like, for instance, you know, global warming. How long have you known that's been a lie? But, you know, there's people out there that to this day will sit there and argue with you about it and tell you, oh, it's all, you know. And the fact of the matter is, most of the experts on the global warming side, oh, yeah, they got PhDs next to their names and they're all kinds of educated people. But when you look into, okay, what field is your PhD in? It's not in climatology. It's not in anything to do with the weather or the environment. It's like in literature or some crap like that. Well, I'm a PhD, and I think global warming is a very serious problem. Oh, a PhD, well, you know. You're a literature PhD. So what? You know, and the scientists on the other side now are starting to come out that are actual climatologists, like the guy who started the Weather Channel.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wrote a big thing just last week that said, you know what, this is a big lie, and it's been a big lie, and now the proof is out that it is a big lie. And,
well,
you know.
Got to break in, Frank. I'll talk to you again later, and folks, watch listen to the Frank Report. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Pastor Dan will be right back.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system. Studies have shown that the farm soil we get our vegetables from is dead, meaning it is depleted of minerals. Sulfur is a mineral. Sulfur has been depleted from the soil, which means most people have been depleted of sulfur. Sulfur has been found to transport oxygen throughout the body. You need oxygen. You need organic sulfur. American Voice Radio Network has organic sulfur. go to AmericanVoiceRadio.com and then to the Superstore to order your organic sulfur. It's your choice. Do you want to feel better or not? Don't forget to tune in to the Sulfur Hour Plus One on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, Thursdays, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Running out, jobs leaving the country. Many people cannot afford to eat or keep a roof over their head. Too many can do neither. Messiah's Branch has a mission church in Wichita, Kansas that helps the victims of this banker's economy, the American people. Your neighbors. The mission is the last hope for so many Americans. We need your help to lift up the poorest of the poor. These are men, women, and children who once had homes, now in the street. They all need what you need. First aid, beds, food, clothing, and so on. You can send a monetary gift or a box of necessities to 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Or donate online by going to WichitaHomeless.com. Or simply call 316-619-4886. 316-619-4886.
Back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin. You're listening to Mission Watch Live on the American Voice Radio Network. Folks, please remember to pray tonight about a donation for our work with the homeless and poor from our mission church in Wichita, Kansas. Support us for we can care for the people that the Father sends us. We don't get any help from any organized churches or government agencies. It's only folks like you that have supported us as we are now in our 15th year to make this mission church work. So why do so many people come to us for help? Well, love, that's the first answer. Treated as family is second. And beyond that, we don't have any set guidelines like programs. The only programs I have is radio programs. People just walk in the door and ask. That's the rule. And if we have a way to fill the need, then we fill it. So this is why the agencies tell all their employees about the Father's Little Mission Church. You see, when guidelines stop them from helping, they send people to us. People who have millions of dollars in their budget send people to a place that really has no budget. We are the last hope for so many, and folks, we are responsible to care one for another, as we are brothers keepers. The Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. You can donate online or mail a check or money order, and you can find all that information at prophecyhour.com, which is like a hub for all our various ministries. So check it out, prophecyhour.com, and now we'll get on with the second half of our program. Okay, tonight we're going to speak with Drew Johnson. He's a columnist. He's a columnist, editorial writer, and a government waste expert at the Washington Times. Mr. Johnson founded and served as the president of Tennessee's Free Market Think Tank. He is a former opinion page editor at the Chattanooga Times Free Press and serves as a senior fellow at the Taxpayers Protection Alliance. Today we speak with him about an article he wrote for the Washington Times entitled Cooling the Global Warming Panic, a United Nations report on climate faces a chilly reception from nature. Are you there with me, Drew?
I am. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's really good to have you on with me. I noticed your article before I was even sent the pitch, because last week the co-founder of the Weather Channel got on the air with Megyn Kelly and really seemed to sock it to the climate change people. Did you happen to see that?
I did. He's certainly been an impressive voice in sort of, I guess, calming some of the fears about global warming alarmists. So, yeah, I did, and I thought he did a great job.
Well, so tell the folks about your article. I'm sure most of them, or some of them probably read it, but most of them haven't. Tell us about the article that you wrote.
Sure, absolutely. My basic argument was once I discovered what the gentleman from the Weather Channel you just mentioned and a lot of other people have come to learn, that there's actually been a pause in global warming since 1998. So in all those years, 16 years or 17 years, however long that's been, there's been no increase in global warming. And that's despite the Al Gores of the world and, you know, all the people that we're used to hearing from frantically about how global warming is going to kill us all. You know, it just hasn't come to pass, but that hasn't stopped the president, Congress, and people like Gore and others from trying to impose rules on businesses, on the economy that will really kill a lot of jobs. And so what I wanted to do with my piece was show that there has been this pause in global warming since 1998, but that hasn't stopped the Obama administration from promoting, and these EPAs from promoting all these just really insane regulations that don't do anything to combat this quote-unquote problem, but really kill jobs at a time that we need jobs in America, kill the economy when so many families are struggling, and really put power in the hands of government where it does not belong.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go with this. So what do you think their motivation is for, you know, continuing on with this fantasy, if you will? That's what I call it, fantasy, because clearly you can see that it's not. I mean, what do you think? What's their motivation?
I think there are a few different motivations. I think the first is that climate change, the environment in general, when you talk about it, it's something that we all care about. We all care about the environment. We don't want dirty air and polluted rivers and things like that. And you know, it's one of those things that you can kind of pull at people's heartstrings. So in a real sense, it's a way to manipulate people by saying, I care about the environment, that's why we're doing this. So to a certain degree, it's vote buying, even though so many of these, you know, these regulations, so many of these policies are pointless and bad and even, you know, cost Americans jobs. I think there's, you know, donors. There are people who make money by things like solar panels and green energy and this sort of thing. And it's really, you know, the Obama administration and a lot of Democrats, frankly, in Congress are in the pockets of these people. And also it's a matter of power. I think that a lot of progressives, the Obama administration, you know, again, some members of Congress feel like if we can sort of get power away from entrepreneurs and businesses and give it to government, allow government to decide what people can create and what people can make with their own factories and using their own capital, then it's better. It's basically a way of getting the government, getting the economy to be more socialist, frankly.
Right. Right. So you said that word social. I don't know how you believe. I actually, this first article of yours I ran across, but I believe that Obama is a socialist and the Democrats are trying to take us towards a socialistic society. And I believe that's what global warming is about. Any thought on that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that there are two angles of that that scare me. First of all, like we were just talking about, any time that you limit what people can manufacture, limit what people can do with their own, you know, with their own property, using their own companies, using their own, you know, their own spirit and mind, and basically get the government involved in regulating those things, that's socialism, certainly. And then the other part of it, which is just as chilling, is this sort of one world government notion where, you know, so much of this is pushed by the UN, you know, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is the organization that won the Nobel Peace Prize along with Al Gore, you know, a few years back. And that's a UN body that admits that global warming has paused and admits that there isn't a lot of use in some of these government actions. But ultimately, they're telling governments you should have cap and trade, you should limit carbon emissions, all these steps that basically create, frankly, a one world government. And that's right. Really scary.
Right. That is scary. Absolutely. And most people don't know, and you might, but, or might not, but actually this, whole global warming thing or environmental thing actually can be traced clear back to Karl Marx, who used this same thing, ideology, against the West because they were polluting the world. The Western world was polluting the West. And that's where the outcry was originally started, as an action of socialism against the West. And it continues on today. So in the first half, please, go ahead. I'll let you address that.
I was just going to say, yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that. And one thing that is so often overlooked is the fact that when we're talking about this sort of, you know, one world government aspect and certain countries and certain bodies telling other countries what they can and can't do, it creates a situation where poorer countries, less developed countries, can't develop because for a country to develop, they have to have a time of manufacturing. They have to basically have plants and do some of the things that other countries have, you know, developed past and don't necessarily right. want to do. And that allows them to feed their kids, educate their kids, get enough money to where they can be concerned about the environment, which is completely legitimate. But if you're worried about dying from malaria and not having clean water and not having enough food, you're not going to care at all about whether your air is clean. You're going to try to live to the next day. And so what we need to do is enable people to go through the growing pains of a developing economy so that they can have the leisure, like we are fortunate enough to have in the United States, to care about the environment the way we do.
Right. Well, is it possible that the carbon credits and the market they want to set up around is one more way to redistribute wealth in their eyes of the average person and make it like a shame market to prop up the failing economy? Do you think that's part of it?
Well, one thing that's for sure about it is it's basically a scam. It's a way for people to invent a tax on companies and you know, make money off of that. It's a tax on companies. Ultimately, it'll cost all of us more as consumers and the people behind these markets. And, of course, you know, Al Gore and Tom Steyer and these names that we hear a lot associated with environmentalism have financial stakes in carbon credit markets and these sorts of things. So it's a way that you can tax businesses you don't like, you can force consumers to pay more for everything, and then you can make a couple extra bucks for yourself if you're, you know, an Al Gore type.
Yeah, absolutely. An Al Gore type, yeah, exactly. And he flies around in airplanes and has billion-dollar mansions and all kinds of things. Maybe not billion-dollar, but very large ones. Kind of hypocritical, I would think. Just like some of the movie stars do, will go around and talk about it and preach, and then they jump in their private jet. So if they're so worried about all the carbon monoxide, they just, you know, it's ridiculous. The first part of this program, I was talking with a fellow that does the Frank Report, and we were talking about the election, and we were talking about how maybe in a couple of states, like maybe either Maryland or New Hampshire, that the vote could actually be swayed by illegal voters. Have you any thoughts on that?
I've got a lot of concerns about making sure that people who actually can vote are allowed to vote, and people who shouldn't be voting, and dead people, and things like that. You know, especially in places like Illinois, where we see, you know, tens of thousands of dead people voting. You know, that sort of stuff is easy to take care of.
Is that a zombie apocalypse? Excuse me, is that a zombie apocalypse, I guess?
Yeah, with Halloween tomorrow, it's appropriate to give dead people to vote, apparently. But,
yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I've never understood the arguments against, you know, showing ID at the voting booth. You know, it seems like we as Americans owe it to voters to make sure that their vote is counted and basically the will of the people is heard. So anything that can assist with that effort, I'm all for.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, especially when in some of these recent elections that we've seen, you know, even the last presidential election could have very well been swayed by illegal voters. And so folks, you know, do you want your elections done legally or do you want them to be, you know, suppressed? And I don't believe that. I mean, look at all the places you got to need an ID for. You know, if you're young and you just turned 21, you go into a liquor store, they want to see your ID and you don't mind showing it to them because, you know, you have it. You're going to buy that bottle of liquor or maybe you're going to book a flight or something and you got to show ID. There's so many things that we show ID for that I see no problem with. And so why should we have a problem showing ID for the thing that makes the country run? And so that's why their arguments just don't hold up much.
Absolutely. There's even a story. I live in right outside of Washington, D.C., and there's a story where there's a Democratic organization that is piling people in buses and getting them to vote both in Maryland and Virginia, obviously bordering states that you can go to, in 10 minutes from one state to the other. And so, this sort of thing, it happens today. It's the sort of thing that you would think of happening 50 years ago or 70 years ago where you pay some guy $50 or $10 or a bottle of liquor or whatever to go vote. But it's happening today, and it's really chilling that with all the technology we have and all the capability that we have to prevent that sort of thing, we still fight about it. I mean, let's get beyond it and make sure that the people who are legally registered to vote in a state get to vote, and only they get to vote.
Absolutely. I believe that that's largely what's, all this immigration is about, is changing the demographics of the country so that it will, swing mostly Democratic, if not, in the recent, but in the future. If you get that many people in, and eventually, even if they don't become citizens, they're going to illegally vote. Like in Maryland, there was a lawsuit filed, I think it was today or yesterday, I read the article today, where they said that they had proof that 400 illegals were registered to vote, and they cited the local jury thing because they had refused to serve as jurors because they were illegal citizens, or not citizens, but illegal aliens. And so, there's been a lawsuit filed over that.
Right. Yeah, it's a problem that, obviously it benefits one party more than the other. And as long as that party gets to have some power, they're going to do everything they can to exploit that issue for sure.
Well, what do you think about the election? We were talking about election. What do you think about it? Do you think if the Republicans take the Senate, do you believe there will be any kind of a change, or is there something you hope to see happen?
I would be surprised if the Republicans didn't take the Senate, and I think that obviously with what we've seen with Obama's policies and some of the compromises that have had to happen between the Republican House and the Democratic Senate, the more free market-oriented people, liberty-minded people that we have in office, the better off we'll be as a country. So if that means that Obama doesn't get anything passed and Republicans don't get anything passed, I know a lot of people are against gridlock, but I think that gridlock is a wonderful thing when the alternative is things like Obamacare, and the alternative is things like the stimulus plan, because I would much rather nothing happen, even if some of the things would be better if they did pass, than for things like that to happen. So, I don't fear more gridlock. What I fear is bigger government, and if gridlock can prevent that, then I'm all for it.
Boy, bigger government. Yeah, exactly. Here's what I'm hoping or praying for. If the Republicans going to take, I'm a conservative, I don't mind saying it. But if we can take the Senate and the House, even if they get vetoed, they go ahead and put forth some of those bills that have been suppressed by Harry Reid. At least it will show the country that there is direction out there and things to make a better economy. I believe that if we ended up with both the House and the Senate, and then we end up with a conservative president, and they do away with Obamacare and loosen some of the restrictions that we have on corporations, I believe the economy in this country would explode, because from the research that I did, I see that many, many companies are holding on to large amounts of cash and just waiting for that situation to happen. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I think would happen in the next 2 years, if the Senate goes Republican, I think that Obama's hand would basically be forced into reducing the corporate tax, which is the highest corporate tax of any corporate tax in the world for a developed nation. And that's why we have all these inversions, and people talk about, you know, Chiquita and Burger King and all these companies moving their headquarters to avoid U.S. taxes. You wouldn't have to do that if you would just lower the corporate tax rate 5%, 8%. It makes no sense to have the highest corporate tax rate in the world and then force businesses away. And if you can get in a situation where you basically, like I said, force Obama's hand to lowering that tax, you have more businesses staying in America, more entrepreneurs creating businesses, and you have more money being taxed. So the rate might go down, you know, 10%, but if you have, you know, billions and billions of dollars more to be taxed, you're ultimately going to get more money anyway through the government, which seems to be all that matters to the government. So I think that's one thing that we could see as a result of Republicans taking the Senate. And then hopefully we could start, seeing arguments made at least for a flatter tax, for a lower personal income tax. And I don't see Obama being for those things, but I certainly see that tone, if the Senate and the House can push those issues, being something that carries through Republican debates and you know, the next Republican primary. And hopefully, you know, whoever comes out can push those ideas.
Yeah, and I have no idea who is. That's too far ahead for me. I don't know of anybody that I could, you know, say, well, I think he's going to run for president or would, you know, be a, you know, I can't go that far in the future because I don't know who would possibly run, you know. I know which looks like they're going to be running against Hillary, but that's a disaster waiting to happen, and I'll say that publicly. Let me ask you a little bit more about your second. You work for the Washington Times, then? Is that what you your sole job, or you do something else, or what do you do?
Yeah, I'm a columnist and editorial writer, and also write a weekly government waste column for the Washington Times, and then I'm also a fellow for a think tank called the Taxpayers Protection Alliance, and at that organization, they do a really good job of exposing wasteful spending and making sure that government doesn't waste our hard-earned tax dollars.
Really? So, do they put out an annual report, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, a lot of what they do is finding waste when there's a when there's a budget vote on a highway bill or something like that, or a state is voting for their annual budget, they'll go through and find some of the waste and expose that and some of the earmarks and ways that basically politicians are buying people's votes by wasting money. So that's one thing that I've always really enjoyed. As a matter of fact, some of the things I found recently, the National Institute for Health spent $2.3 million to get monkeys drunk. So that's your tax dollars. $2.3 million to get monkeys drunk and see how it affected them. So this sort of spending is just ridiculous. We see it so much. The National Endowment for the Humanities spent thousands of dollars on seeing how the tea culture had sort of developed in India, how ethnic identity was determined in 18th century Ecuador. I mean, this is actual stuff that you spent your money on. I remember $6,000 went to study the history of African American golfers. So I mean, this is the sort of stuff that, you know, we as taxpayers.
I guess people are sitting out there wondering how they apply for the money, right? Okay.
Exactly.
That's just insanity. Why? Yeah, exactly. So you don't have a private website or anything like that, do you?
No, but I certainly encourage everybody to go to WashingtonTimes.com. That's where you can read my stuff and the piece that we were just talking about. In fact, I've got a piece on there from a few weeks ago. We mentioned Al Gore a second ago about his hypocrisy. I'm actually the person who, it's been 8 years ago now, I guess, uncovered those numbers that showed that he uses 20 times more electricity at his house than the average person.
Really?
I have a piece about that.
Hey,
about
I've quoted that back before. You know.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's good.
Now I got to talk to you. Amen.
Yeah, so, check out WashingtonTimes.com. I've got a piece about some of the new environmental hypocrites that are following in the shoes of Al Gore and basically making money off of environmental fears and all this sort of stuff. And actually, a few of them are making money off of coal companies and off of oil companies while they're telling us not to use those things because they think that it will create a shortage and drive up the prices and they'll make money off of it. So if that's not the worst kind of hypocrisy when it comes to, you know, global warming hysteria and saying that fossil fuels are going to kill us all, I don't know what is.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really blessed by you being on with me, and I really want to thank you for your work because it's not a popular thing to write the kind of article that you wrote here the other day, and then especially, lo and behold, you're the one that wrote that one about with the statistics about Al Gore. That was a wonderful piece. I did read that, so I guess I have read your other work. Folks, go to thewashingtontimes.com, check them out, and they've got good articles over there. We use them all the time. Well, thanks for being on with me, Drew, and maybe we'll do it again sometime.
My pleasure. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
All right. Be blessed, brother. Well, really, I read the article that he's talking about, but I didn't remember it was Drew that wrote it, but amen, that's a good article. Folks, I do want to say one thing. We talked about the vote a little bit, but, you know, don't let it discourage you. Get out and vote this week. All I can say is this time, it doesn't matter if you agree with the Republicans. We really need to get the Senate under a better control. So don't just vote Republican. You got to vote conservative. Get people that we got to change the order of business because Obama is going to be a nightmare these last 2 years. He really is going to be a nightmare. I agree with Rush Limbaugh when he said it, and it's just a fact. Make sure you tune in to the next program that we do because I've got another good guest on for you, and his name is Pastor Dan also, but we'll call him Cowboy Pastor Dan. He is a circuit riding preacher that rides the country on a horse. I met him the other day at the gym. He's an older dude, and it's going to be a pretty cool program. So make sure you tune in for that an hour from now. But we must remember there is only one God. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repented sins. He rose after 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. And through him and only through him is the way to the Father. Remember to love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your soul. And then love your neighbor as yourself. You know, most people remember Yeshua quoting that fact when asked what the greatest commandments was in the law. But you know what? Those are Torah. Those are in what most of you folks out there call the Old Testament. To love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, and all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. Be a blessing to others. Lord our God, Father, King of the universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you. His face shines upon you and is gracious to you and gives you peace. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.